If the Lord does not return soon, I hope that this message has a lot of application for those who hear it after I am dead. And I really do. I'm not trying to be funny about that. I would love for it to have reach out beyond my lifetime again if the Lord doesn't return. I pray that many who hear it would sense a calling to the many ministry opportunities that the medical field allows, and that all of us who hear it would also walk away being extremely thankful for God's amazing gifts to us in Western medicine. I have added the word Western in front of medicine on purpose, even from what I printed on the bulletin. So tonight I've got just a tad bit of testimony and then some principles, and then I'm going to give some prescriptions. Thank you. Okay, this is personal. I have torn ligaments in my knee, and another time had an avulsion fracture of the tibial tuberosity, which is the thing that is right below your kneecap. I have a bump below my kneecap. It goes along with what's called Osgood-Schlatter's disease, which is just horrible sounding. I know that, but it's the doctors who described it. So I have a little bump below my knee that attaches to the tendon that goes over your knee that makes you be able to pick your foot back up. When I was younger, not only did the tendons rip off of that little spot, but that little bone broke in half. I've had my tonsils out twice, sort of. Once to cut out the tonsils, and then again, I had to go back for surgery to have the blood clot that was so big in my throat that was blocking my breathing removed. I have fractured vertebrae and had bone chipped from my hip to fuse two vertebrae together that are still held together by four long screws. Each set of two screws is connected by a little rod that's obviously expanded, but that is still in my back at L2 and L3. Because I have metal in my back, I had to one time, and still having a lot of pain, I couldn't have another MRI at the time, so I had to have what they called a myelogram CAT scan, which includes a shot of contrast dye into your spine, into your spinal cord. But the needle hole didn't clot, and so I was leaking spinal fluid out of that hole for about 7 days. The place where your excess spinal fluid is stored is what cushions your brain from your skull. So my brain was resting on my skull with such a ridiculous headache I can't believe. I was in college at that time. If you are a medical professional, please don't listen to this next part. I was away from home. I only had access to meds that one of the guys in my dorm had. And so for that week, I was taking 800 milligram tablets of ibuprofen a day, which is the equivalent of 32 Advil a day for a week. And it did nothing. The way to fix that is called a blood patch, where you go back into the hospital, they lay you on your side, they draw half a cup of blood from your arm, stick a needle back into your spine, and push your own blood back into your spinal cord, and then hopefully a while later it makes its own clot, and you stop having the massive headache. I've had the top third of my stomach wrapped around my lower esophageal sphincter, so at the bottom of your esophagus going into your stomach, that had gotten too loose, and so I had massive acid reflux that was coming up into my esophagus that was having a variety of problems. So I had to have, how they fix that is they take the top third of your stomach and wrap it around and staple it together to make that valve work again. I've had neck surgery to drill a hole between C6 and 7 for a crushed nerve that still has left permanent damage to the nerve running down my right arm and into these three fingers. I still have pain and a variety of weakness, even though it's not as excruciating as it was before they drilled the hole. When I have to have the next surgery, which is a neck fusion, they have to come in through the front to do the fusion. So anytime I'm being too vigorous, shoveling snow or whatever, Mo always looks out the window and goes... I have broken my ring finger twice. Both times Jonathan was involved. Jonathan and footballs. I've had another back surgery to take a piece of disc that was broken out and was pushing and pinching into my spine, causing debilitating, excruciating pain down my legs. I had a golf ballish sized cyst cut out of my chest in the doctor's office, having been poked around 30 to 40 times with a Novocaine needle. When he took out this cyst, only to find out later that it was actually a rare kind of cancer that required them to go into surgery to remove larger margins around the area to make it a clean cut. So I, as Jonathan likes to say, I have entrance and exit wounds. Having had that surgery, there's not a lot of extra skin to pull back together on your chest. And so I ended up accumulating crazy amounts of fluid in my left pec, which at least six times required follow-up visits where the doctor was pulling out cc's worth of fluid by jamming a huge needle into my pec and just sucking it out. And that was way worse than the actual surgery, because at least they put you to sleep for that. I'm probably about halfway done. I lost half of my blood from an internal bleed, spending parts of 5 days in the hospital, and taking at least 6 months, it was at least 6 months, trying to deal with the anemia. I had used being anemic as an illustration before. And then when I got it, I was like, wow, yeah, that's really bad. The first couple days when Mo came to visit me in the hospital while I was still bleeding and they weren't able to find out what was causing it, she'd come to visit me and asked me if I wanted her to turn the television on. And I kept saying no. And I realized a week or two later that's because I didn't even have enough energy to watch TV. That was going to require too much mental activity. That's how drained it felt. In the process of trying to find out what caused the bleed, two pill cams have died. Their battery has died somewhere in my body. So it's you swallow a little pill that takes 3 pictures per second on its way through your digestive tract, but its battery only lasts about 8 hours, and neither of the times that I tried it did it make it all the way through. So I've been in the emergency room with costochondritis, which is inflammation of the cartilage near the breastbone that mimics a heart attack, twice with kidney stones, multiple times for spinal pain, and as recently as last Christmas Day with chest pain. I have spondylolisthesis, which is displacement of the vertebrae to the front at L4 and L5, which causes various problems. I have gastroparesis, where things get stuck in my stomach too long, and that's part of the reason why the pill cam didn't make it all the way through. Ironically, my only known allergy is to penicillin, which you'd think would be a helpful thing. And most of all, I'm pretty sure I'm a COVID survivor. I'm a COVID survivor. I didn't get the tests. I can't remember the last day where I wasn't in pain of some level of some kind somewhere. It is a significant thing to just keep getting up some days. And I mean, I did have birthday, but I'm really not that old. And you know what? With all of that, I have it way better than Mo. So a lot of my problems have cool names and then more acute diagnoses. And, you know, can have surgery and then recover from that. But in Mo's case, a couple of the problems that she has, based on none of you becoming doctors yet to fix it, she's going to have the pains and the problems that she has for the rest of her life. So I have it better than her. And both of us would be dead were it not for Western medicine. Obviously not all of those injuries or problems are terminal things. And lots of you. I'm only saying my list for why I care, not like you all don't have your own various problems as well. But it wasn't too long into Mo and I's marriage when I realized that I should have been a pharmacist. There are so many health, body, medical problems that she and I have had, let alone conversations with family and church family and friends with hurts, whether they're diagnosed or undiagnosed, that I wish I had studied a lot more about it. And now I am saying I needed to have been a pharmacist because I can't stand looking at blood. So I couldn't have been a doctor or a nurse. I couldn't pull that off because I would faint, and then I'd have to add that to my list of a concussion from falling down on the ground. I get sick looking at and smelling blood. So, but pharmacy, that could have helped out. So I care about medicine and the medical sphere because every day, in some way, we all have bodies that God has given us, and I am either looking in the mirror or talking to the person that is my spouse or even being asked to pray for other people with hurts and pains. So I know that it hurts, and I care about that. Good health is good. So it's not really better to be sick. It's not better to be broken. It doesn't mean that you can't learn a lot of things or that you don't come to depend on God's grace when you're hurt. But Adam and Eve were not created pre-sin. They weren't created for disease or weakness or obviously then death. So sin brought about broken souls and broken bodies. Sin brought that about. Yet, even though with sin God is kind and merciful to often heal directly or even through a mediator, through a doctor or through some kind of medicine, God is kind to do healing to us. He thinks it's good. In Psalm 103, there is a praise. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquity, who heals all your diseases. And this is not prosperity promise of any disease, any sickness. Automatically, he guarantees to fix or fix immediately. But it is still God who takes delight in fixing things that are wrong. Who redeems your life from the pit, who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy, who satisfies you with good so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. That's a physical consequence of the healing coming about. The energy returns, the stamina, the eagerness to use your body and spend it in work or serving other people. Of course, Jesus healed many people temporally. That was a big part of his ministry. It corroborated who he was in a unique way, but it's still something that he cared about. And many times he chose to heal on the Sabbath to go out of his way to not only say that healing was good, but healing was lawful. It was not wasted. One example of that is in Matthew 12. And a man was there with a withered hand, and they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So that they might accuse him, he said to them, "Which of you who has a sheep, if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more value is a man than a sheep?" And of course, he is making at least two points here. One is about his prerogative to do what is good on the Sabbath. But what the good is he's doing is healing this man with the withered hand. So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And the man stretched it out, and it was restored healthy like the other. Because it's good. We have regular examples of men praying for healing, either their own or someone else's, in Scripture. I just looked at my journal app this afternoon, and if I have it recorded correctly, 9 years ago today was the day Jim had a heart attack in London. And all we could do is pray. But we prayed. And we prayed thinking that it was right to pray for that, not useless. Well, you know, he's saved. He'll go to heaven. It'll be fine. Like, the healing, we have examples of praying for it. Our elders pray every week for those in the flock with physical problems because we believe it is good and lawful. For a while, at least, God gave some the spiritual gift of healing in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 28. God also gives the promise of resurrected bodies that will not be subject to the same threats and breakdowns in 1 Corinthians 15, 42 to 43, where there's no more perishable body. There's no more weakness in the body. There's no more dishonorable part of living in the body. We are promised health, promised ultimate health in our glorified resurrected bodies. Good health is good, while we can also acknowledge that good health is not the ultimate good. Even on earth, good health is not the ultimate good. So before we get too much further, let's acknowledge that being super strong and healthy for 90 years and then going to hell is a limited good. So in light of eternity, God giving someone fantastic energy and strength for many, many years, and yet they don't submit themselves to the Lord and therefore are judged as rebels for not being thankful, including being thankful for the health that God gave them. That makes them more accountable, not less. God's giving good things to people for sake of their accountability to give Him thanks. But of course, they can be super healthy and still go to hell, and that means that their health is a relative good. But even on earth, in Ecclesiastes, Solomon writes about those who are given the gift of joy, and he explicitly identifies the contrast in Ecclesiastes chapter 6. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, this would be a sign of virility, a sign of energy, a sign of health. 100 children, lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he has no burial. I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. A couple verses later, it actually talks about a man who lives 1,000 years twice over. And in our context, it doesn't matter if he lived 1,000 years twice over because he had the right amount of surgeries and he took the right amount of vitamin supplements and he got some special elixir from the doctor that fixed all of his ails. It doesn't matter if he had all of that for a couple thousand years and still didn't get the gift of joy to enjoy the health that he had or the kids that came about that God blessed him with. So even on earth, health is not the ultimate good. Though we still acknowledge that it is a good. And of course, eternity afterwards, resurrected to life, is one sort of blessing resurrected in order to experience physical torment. The punishment for those who rebel against the Lord, doesn't matter how good they had it during their years on earth. Now, there are a variety of causes, correlations, connections between why people get sick or hurt or diseased or broken. Many of those reasons came before Monsanto. They came before Merck, the big pharma company. There are a lot of reasons that people have been sick and died, before the abuses that we see sometimes in our current Western medical establishment. A lot of people were sick and died before any of those things. So a man could totally get sick or get hurt by being stupid. Andy just laughed. I didn't even have it in mind to connect anything to Andy and injuries, but sure, right? Can just fail to be a good steward of your body as well as put yourself in a position to get hurt. A man could be given bad genetics. That's not his fault. A man could be providentially chosen by God as an object lesson. This is at least in the Bible, Job and the man born blind in John chapter 9. In John chapter 9 especially. Some of the religious leaders asked Jesus, well, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus said, it's not that either his parents or he had sinned. It was so that the glory of God might be put on display. And look, it doesn't matter how many organic, all-natural popsicles you eat, or whatever it is. Like, if God decides you're going to be the object lesson, like, there you go. So, being a good steward, yes, and thinking that we are the ones who ultimately make the final choice as to when we're sick or not. A man could be unintentionally hurt by someone else. 2 Samuel 4:4 is Mephibosheth, whose nanny picked him up under duress and started running and dropped him, and his legs became crippled. And he was crippled for the rest of his life because his nanny was trying to save him but ended up causing a significant problem. Unintentionally hurt by someone else is probably also where we would put Andy in this list related to others. I mean, of course you can start having problems by being intentionally, maliciously hurt or attacked by someone else. You could get sick being exposed to someone you're trying to help. This is why doctors wear masks. This is not why everyone else should wear a mask. This is why we understand some people with certain level, not scarves. They're not wearing scarves into diseased places to protect themselves. But you can get sick trying to help somebody else. It could be what I'm going to call here a sanctification tool. Spurgeon said something about how some men would really do well to get sick for a while. And as I said earlier, we can learn some things when we are broken. I was in college. I already thought God was calling me to be a pastor. I already started having that desire. I was in college, though, and playing baseball when I fractured vertebrae. And I didn't say earlier, before having surgery where they put those screws in, I wore a 1/4 inch thick plastic brace from my neck to my pelvis 24 hours a day for 8 months, trying to heal it like a cast. And it was horrible. Like, I had to get laid in the plaster of Paris to make my own special torso fitting brace. And I was completely humbled. I was sanctified in at least a couple ways. One was, baseball was the only thing I thought I was really any good at. And then God said, well, I will take that. And then, even when I had to have surgery for it, you know, my dad, so when I had surgery, my first back surgery when I was 20, and like my dad had to pull up my boxer shorts for me because I couldn't reach my feet. So like the humility of depending on others when you think you are strong, and then even the being willing to give up something that you thought was super important. These are opportunities that God can use as sanctification tools. Of course, you might just get old. And you've used your body and it's been well used and now worn out. And so old and more susceptible to various weaknesses and challenges. It is also possible that we get sick or we have a problem because we're sinning. So both Job and the man born blind in John 9, that was not their deal. However, there are a number of other times in the Bible where it is related to sin. In James chapter 5, is any one of you sick? Let him call for the elders and come and anoint them with oil. And the next part is about confessing our sins to one another. And while there's disagreement about what that passage means, it is very possible that the reason that you've called for the elders and not for the doctor is because what is making you sick is a soul problem. That's possible. In 1 Corinthians 11, when it talks about eating and drinking at the Lord's Supper unworthily, Paul says, this is why some of you are weak and sick and have died. Which is from, again, unworthy participation, sinful participation in the ordinance of communion. So it is not impossible to think that at times some sickness, some disease could be related to even our sin. In Psalm 32, verses 3 and 4, the psalmist is talking about how his bones are dried up within him while he kept silent, which is kept silent until he confessed his sin. And then God is gracious to forgive him sin. Now, obviously, that's complicated. And thinking about all those things with Psalm 139:14, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, you know, that goes beyond just getting a cool medical app and being able to layer in all the parts of you. You guys, a certain generation of you should remember Captain Kangaroo and Slim Goodbody. And it is probably anatomically inappropriate for him to be wandering around in that full body leotard, but like half of Slim Goodbody's leotard was all the organs and half was the skeleton. And he'd come out in his little bit of Captain Kangaroo and show you what that was like so that you could be healthy. And that's super complex. My wife is really interested in all of this, and so I bought her a medical program where you can drill down on any part of the body and then click check marks as to which systems you want to see for that part of the body. And then it builds them in. You can 360 around it and up and down and, you know, pull it out, those kinds of things. I don't want to look at it, but she likes looking at it. I have not studied medicine much. I barely listen to the doctor when he tells me my own problems. I take Mo with me to pay attention to what's wrong with me. But I do know that we are more than flesh and blood. We are more than blood and bones. That the use of even flesh in the New Testament has a number of references. There are bodily appetites and bodily weaknesses, along with spiritual appetites and temptations, along with rational abilities and ignorances, along with our will, and somehow those all are made by God to belong together. And that can be complicated. As I have mentioned, Jesus said there was no direct sin that caused the man to be born blind. But in light of some of the other passages that describe how you could get sick because it's a spiritual problem, I wonder, when you go to the doctor, how many of us say, well, I know my blood pressure is up this week because I've been angry at my kids pretty much nonstop for a few months now. I can't even imagine what it would look like to go to Dr. Google and start typing in our symptoms. Oh yeah, and I've been really afraid of whatever, right? So we're looking for some answers. Many of those answers potentially do have physical answers to them or physical ways to treat them. Some of them are more connected. So do you say that you are not sleeping because you're anxious? Or did your anxiousness start happening because you can't sleep? Because sleep has connection to all of who we are. And then when you put that into the context of the medical industry and the insurance labyrinth, well, that is still under the heading of it's complicated. If you have a lot of physical problems, it can become a full-time job to track down the right physician who can help you with your thing, let alone then the billing system and cash or copay, and they never send you the right paperwork first. And it never comes right first, it seems. There are a lot of moving parts. And certainly not everyone is motivated for the right reasons. And in fact, I want to argue that many in our current medical industry are vocationally inconsistent with their worldview, which is for them probably unseen. What is the dominant worldview of most of the people in the medical industry who would be listening to our problems and trying to help us? What's the dominant worldview of most of the medical system? Science. And so-called science, air quotes, science is their God. And the God of science says that we all came about from some primordial goo. It is an evolutionary science. Whether or not they immediately connect what they're doing and their diagnosis back to evolution or not, that is for many, obviously not all, there are Christians. We have nurses in particular in our own congregation. But many are coming into their work, their profession, with being consistent would actually need to say that the only reason to treat anyone is to treat the strong to, if anything, make them stronger. Wherever we want to start the blame for how much money people spend on medical things, and I acknowledge it is big business, the fact that there are so many people who require medical attention cannot be isolated from the gospel of Christ, which results in mercy to the weak. The reason there are so many people going to the doctor, the reason why there are so many people with problems is because they are not dead. And if the medical profession was consistent with the worldview that undergirds what they're doing, they wouldn't care about the weak people dying. The weak people dying, the sickly people dying, is good for their system if they are being consistent. the only people who treat weak people is based off of Christianity and Christ's treatment of the weak and what he taught us about being image bearers. Obviously, Moses is the one who starts with the image bearing. The only reason why we think every human being has dignity and why their life is worth helping and serving is because of a triune God who is a personal God who loves his people, and Jesus Christ and the gospel that changes us to then not just try to be the fittest and beat up other people so that we can have more. And so, you know, Christians wax eloquent about how bad all the medical stuff is and how many people have to go to the doctor. And again, a lot of people have to go to the doctor because they're not dead. And it is through that same system of Western medicine that has brought us to such cultural thriving that people aren't dead. That's really good news. As Christians, we know that killing due to cost or some other inconvenience is wrong. So abortion and euthanasia are not health care. Destroying human life is not good or lawful. The increase in transgender medical treatments is likewise unlawful because it's not healing. It is damaging and disfiguring what God has made, not causing it to work better or work right. However, abortion, euthanasia, transgender treatments, whether hormones or surgeries, those are the things that are consistent with science as God. Because science doesn't care about you. Only God cares about humans and image bearing. The actual worldview that is undergirding most of modern medicine is Christian, even if not perfectly applied. Obviously, there are ways that it's twisted and abused. But still, for us, the only reason you can depend on going to the emergency room and people actually caring about you is due to the influence of Christianity on our culture. So people, again, may be acting inconsistently with their worldview if they're not Christians themselves, but it only works because of Christianity. This is an important principle to park on just for a bit longer. For all the problems we have it better than ever in human history. Any generation of people would prefer and choose to live where we are. Never have more people been as healthy as they are. Never have less people been dying of starvation and infections and injuries. Many of our arguments are over quality of life levels after survival. We are all alive to be able to complain about how bad we feel, which is, again, different than being dead. This is due to Christianity and the implications of confessing and loving and following Jesus. If you look at a world map and note the nations that are considered first, second, and third world nations, you can do this about a variety of things, including business and food and economics, but it works when it comes to medical care as well. By far, the first world countries, places with, generally speaking, better medical care, first world countries are the places where the gospel has been. Second world countries are typically Catholic. Third world countries are typically still pagan, still worshiping false gods, superstitions. The first world countries, as you look on a map today, where there is better medical care, this is at least correlated, if not caused by, the fact that Christians went there. Considered by direction, this happens to be the West. And West from where? We live on a globe. I'm not flat earthing. So West from where? West from Jerusalem. Who cares about that? Well, we care about the gospel of Jesus Christ coming west from Jerusalem. This is Western civilization, Western culture, Western medicine is everywhere that the gospel of Jesus has gone. Of course there are problems. There are perversions and abuses. There is abuse of the good, and men with power often hurt others with that power, according to Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 9. But we should not be ungrateful for how amazing we have it. Yes, physicians and hospital CEOs and presidents of drug companies may be greedy and get a God complex. And other men are bitter and self-righteous in the name of God and just a different kind of unpleasant. So I want to give you a smorgasbord of hot takes. A hot take is a quickly produced, strongly worded, and often deliberately provocative or sensational opinion. Vaccines are amazing. They are life-saving. They are God-glorifying. They also should not be mandated by the government, and certainly not marketed by those who change their minds more than their latex gloves. Vaccines are amazing and God-glorifying and shouldn't require a $100 million lottery to convince citizens to get it. Vaccines can have a history and they can be tested, so we ought to check that out. Some skepticism towards one that don't have a history seems appropriate. But in general, woohoo that a lot of people haven't died from polio, from some of the other great medicine that is keeping people alive. Even with certain side effects. You want a side effect or you want to be dead? So they can be investigated. Infertility treatments are amazing, life-giving, God-glorifying. They should also be evaluated. And the hearts of an infertile couple, considering them, the hearts of that infertile couple should be honest. If they have made having a child into their God and there is no other way that they can be happy, then that is a heart problem more than a physical problem. But why not look into medicine that could help? Further down the road, I am in favor of epidurals for women who want them. When Mo has gotten epidurals, I have to leave the room because I don't even want to know that a needle is going into anybody's spine. But even though I know the verse that God said he was going to give women pain in childbirth, and who do we think we are that we can, you know, somehow mitigate the pain that God has promised for Eve who ate the fruit? Well, he has other ways to make it painful. It doesn't just have to be without the epidural. I'm in favor of C-sections for those who need them. Cloning technology is amazing and dangerous. And I don't think for humans. And I get that you can't really say, well, for animals or for plants. And then no doctor is ever going to be like, what about humans? But I don't think it should be used for making humans. That's not a medical help. I think that there are some theological and personal reasons for that. Like babies should have a mom and a dad as much as possible. Obviously, there are situations where a parent dies, but that's different than, you know, test tube creations and cloning. Narcotics are amazing, pain-easing, God-glorifying. And when taken appropriately, including not taking them as an escape from reality, but as a help to fulfill one's responsibilities, stop bashing on narcotics. There are people in our congregation that serve you because they are taking pain meds that otherwise would not be able to do so. And instead of taking meds to get away, they take meds to give themselves. So I do not think that Kuiperians are only all natural, are only allowed homeopathic remedies, are only allowed alternative medicine, only supposed to consider herbal solutions and tea, though tea is fine. Investigate those, learn about those, and don't bash on a lot of how we got where we are. So, as we have established, I am not a doctor. That's not going to stop me from giving some quick medical advice. Your body is the Lord's. He gave it to you, warts and all. He expects you to serve Him with it. Medicine is also the Lord's. And while some may treat medicine as a god, God is not threatened by His own creation. He's not threatened by the other solutions that He has put into creation for men to take dominion of and figure out and be able to help and serve one another who are hurting or in pain. He enables doctors and nurses and even Big Pharma every day to bless people. Every thumb's width of a pill bottle container with tamper-proof, child-proof packaging is His. Every time you can't get that open with your thumb, it's still His. Do your homework. And this is both more possible than ever on your phone. And also the challenge these days are competing solutions, not a lack of suggestions. But more competing solutions is better than living even 200 years ago. Oh, it's just so much work to read all this paperwork. You're right. So you could read paperwork to build a time machine and go find a better generation to live in where you didn't have to read the paperwork. It's totally an option. But not better. Get a second opinion. Sure. Do your homework. Get a second opinion. Give grace to one another. Grace may come in the form of speaking truth, as in telling the other person, look, I think this is in your head. I think this is your fault. You only eat Twinkies and drink monster drinks, and you wonder why your heart is racing. I think you don't need a doctor. I think that can be grace. We don't go to see a doctor to get grace from a doctor by him lying to us. So if your friend is stuck in a self-serving falsehood, it might be good to talk about it. Also, imagine the bedside manner of a good doctor, and imagine the amount of work applying the golden rule that you would want a doctor to give to you, listening to you and asking questions and finding out what's wrong so that he can best serve you, rather than just you walking in the door and him automatically telling you what's wrong. If the Facebook post you read about how sugar is the reason your friend is falling apart fits, then you go ahead and share that Facebook article with them. And also, maybe you then should consider that you are the thorn in their flesh by all your Facebook articles. Fourth, especially if you're younger, give thought to if and how you may be called to study and make the medical sphere better. In all of its complications, we just are not close to having it all figured out. And it's noble and good and right and hard. It is complicated. The kind of people that are getting a classical Christian education with the right worldview and learning how things fit together and what's logical and what isn't. Many of you are the kind of people who maybe God would call into helping serve other hurting people. There's not a lot of doctors that I have been to that are putting all the things together like seems possible. So maybe some of you could be that. And last, my last prescription is to give thanks to God. And I think you ought to give thanks to God for meds and for those who serve in the sphere of medical care, for those who prescribe meds, for those who don't need meds. You can give thanks if you don't need meds. Like, give thanks. And if you don't need meds, you should also still give thanks for those who do need meds so that you can ask them questions about it when you come to need meds. Because they will have gone ahead and be able to share. 2 Corinthians 1 talks about being comforted in our afflictions so that we can comfort others, and by an extended application that works even for various bodily pains and aches and ills and problems. So give thanks for what meds you take or don't take. It isn't a game to feel superior to another person because you don't have to do what they have to get by. It's not a game to see who can take the least amount of meds. I clearly win for most ibuprofen in a week, so we don't need to compete that way either. But like giving thanks and grace to one another. Kyperians really have the opportunity to please the Lord by showing mercy to each other. And that's different than trying to please the Lord by better complaining. While it may not be possible to see someone else healed or made better or stronger, it is always possible to make somebody else more miserable. And many of the hurting, I mean, I'm assuming even, you know, some who are here tonight, when you're hurting, you're recovering, maybe recovering, or it's a long-term thing. Many of those who are hurting already feel lonely and sometimes unseen. And that's not a cause for them to be offended. You know, the woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years certainly had come to the end of what she had. And that's a reason to be kind and show grace, even if we don't know what meds they should take. And all kinds of reasons just to be thankful for how good we have it. So there's more work to be done, which is why I am calling for young people to keep doing this work even after I'm dead. There's going to be more people with problems until the Lord comes back. So it's a good, lawful sphere, a Kyperian one that we ought to care about in the name of the Lord. So let me pray. Father, thanks for the opportunity to consider these things, your good gifts to us. Amazing. We are none of us here. We're none of us dead. And many times that's because of your kindness through years of people studying, working, testing, trying things out. And we are the beneficiaries. We are reaping what we have not sown. Help us now also sow better too, so that those who come after us will be able to reap even better. Help us to trust you, depend on you for soul and body. It's all yours. We are yours. We want to honor you. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.